I'm recording for Ricardo. I don't know what, how deep we'll get, but let's see, 9:25. All right, so one of you had asked this question about women, and then Jason preached on it. And I got to thinking about it afterwards, and there's still stuff that, like, exists in that conversation that didn't really come up. So I was just wondering if that had addressed some of that, or if there was still kind of an outstanding question there. And I don't remember which one of you asked.
So we talked about, we had asked Jason about, there was, we're currently reading the Bible, so we're on the Old Testament. I'm looking at Mike.
Yeah, you're good.
The New. So in one of them, they talked about women always wearing head coverings.
Right.
And there was a very specific, and I was like, wow, that's, I knew Muslims wear them, I know that there are other religions, but I hadn't heard it as a Christian kind of, I guess Muslims are Christian, but
should not speak in church.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They should go to their husbands for.
Yep. If they have any questions, take it out.
See, I'm more of a practical rule follower. So, you, like, it seems to me like you say you can't wear it. You have to wear something on your head.
And then you should
have to,
do that.
Then you should do that. So, how do we step away from that and not step away from the other rules that we're supposed to follow?
Right. Yeah, that's good. And okay, so there's in seminary, they teach us the rule of biblical interpretation is to figure out what was meant first to them and then what principle what God was trying to convene that would apply to all people. And then we look at what does that mean to us now? Because sometimes we'll read a text and we'll go, oh, it's 2018, and we read our culture into it and we assume we're supposed to take from it this thing that's for our culture. Now, we tend to be, in conservative Christian circles, literalists in the sense that typically if it says you do this, right? In that particular context for head coverings, the implication that people have taken from it, the general understanding, is that the women are supposed to be modest, and the women of the day, that would have been a cultural understanding. Like a woman with her hair uncovered in the day would have been immodest. And so he was basically calling the women to a life of modesty so as not to disrupt the church service. Because a lot of what's going on in that particular text is talking about how God is a God of structure and that the church should make sense. And if a stranger comes in and observes the church service, it should be orderly. And so a woman coming in with her head uncovered would have been disruptive and taken away from the service, right? So that's the idea, is that modesty matters and keeping the body from being distracted matters. Now, if you go to the mosque, because Jason and I are friends with the imam down the street, he will explain every time that the reason they have their women and men, because they have them separated entirely. So the men go in on the first floor and the women are on the second floor. And the women have their head covered. Same idea. In their culture, like, their hair is their, it's just a private part. And so, like, I've heard them say, like, my hair is for my husband. And Kim will tell you when she goes to their house and they're uncovered, because if it's just women, they uncover. And she said they have beautiful hair and they style them like really nice because it's a treasure for their husbands. But then they cover that because it's a modesty issue. So in the Middle Eastern culture, which is what the Christian church was built in, the idea of female modesty is a big deal. But they were also mixing in with the Romans and the Greeks where that wasn't a thing. And so there was a culture collide, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Now, the imam says that for them, they do prayers where they get down and they get in these lines. They just line up, line, facing east. And they do this, you know, kneel down, face forward. And they were like, if we had women and men mixed up, and it's immodest for this woman to be right in front of this guy and they're all bending down and looking at each other, you know. So that's what they say is the reason they separate, is to keep the service from being disrupted. And I think it's the same idea. The decent question is, when do you pick and choose? Like, what you can say is a cultural expectation and what you can say isn't, right? And that's where you get into this question of women should be silent in church, right? This is actually, I thought about, if we weren't done with this conversation, I would raise this issue. So some people don't believe the Bible is literally true and they pick and choose, right? Or they say this chapter is less scholarly than that chapter, or they doubt this actually came from Jesus' mouth. All this like liberal theology. But Bible-believing Christians who would say everything in here is the word of God sometimes disagree on this issue of women. I don't know anyone that believes women should be silent in church. I'm sure they exist. But there is a distinction between women and leadership. And so that because Paul talks about it, like, I don't permit a woman to speak. And what people believe that to mean is to speak, like to teach, to publicly teach. And it said a woman should not have authority over a man. So there's all these issues of male femaleness, right? So I read a book. It's the best book I've ever read in terms of debate. It's called Two Views on Women in Ministry, right? And they should do this for every topic because it was people. They had to agree. There's four authors. They all had to agree that the Bible is the inspired word of God, period, and that they're Christ-following, Bible is truth people. Then two of them wrote on the argument that there's no longer a distinction between male and female in the church. And the other two wrote from the distinction that there is a distinction, but like Jason said, it's not a superiority inferiority thing. It's just separate roles. So the one is called egalitarian, which is we are all equal and we're one. And they use their main verse for that is there's no longer male or female, Jew or Greek, slave or free man. There's one body, one baptism, one Lord. Right. And so there's a distinction there that's saying all these distinctions fell with the cross. Right. The complementarian position says we're equal, but we complement each other because we have different roles and we connect, but nobody's over another person. And they would say that if you go back before the fall, Eve was created to be a helper for Adam, and it wasn't a problem, right? And it became a problem at the fall. But when we look for God's ideal, we go back to before sin and say that's how he designed it, right? And he designed it, like Jason said, man was lonely and he made a helper for the woman, and they lived together in harmony and goodness, even though they had different roles, right? So that's the way it ought to be. That's what they would say. But both groups believe you can take a verse and make this case. I studied this in seminary, and I came to the conclusion that the case for we're different but equal is a better case, because you have to explain away a lot of things, I think, to get to the other position. Because Paul says some pretty specific things about I do not permit. And that was in the New Testament after Jesus. You know what I mean? It's not like an Old Testament thing where we could say, well, Jesus fulfilled the law and we don't need that anymore. So, but clearly there's some issue there. Right. But the way this book works, and I would highly recommend it, the one author makes their case. Each author writes a chapter making their argument. Then the other team responds one at a time to the other two. Right. So there's the first four chapters are their cases. The next four chapters is somebody saying, yeah, you're wrong, and here's why, based on what they said. Then the final four chapters, they get to come back. And so it's like a conversation between Christian brothers in book form, which I found fascinating, and I learned a lot. And we had a fight up here once, not fight, but we had, Jason mentioned it last week that if Rachel was here, she'd jump up here right now, because Rachel was talking about teaching our old youth pastor or something. And he goes, I couldn't learn from you because you're a woman. And it became this big thing because she's like women, women, women. And so I assigned them both that book. I said, we're not going to argue about this. You're going to read this book. And then you have to argue the other guy's position. And it never happened because our youth pastor left. But we were all looking forward to it. But I think the point to be made is you can be a Christian in disagreement on that issue. You know what I mean? And you can make that case either way from scripture. And so there's some stuff that I think will remain a mystery. And you kind of have to pick a team because I think we're all trying to sort through the word. But that one's a little sticky. And so I think it's one of those where you study it out. Here's what I have learned from my wife. It's easy for me to take that position and go, I think it's this. But who knows? Who cares, right? For her, it's a big deal because the idea that somehow God sees her as less really bothers her, and she doesn't understand it. And I keep, and no matter how many times I say, it's not less, it's different, it feels less and it feels different. So she really struggles with that. So I've learned to respect the struggle. You know what I mean? And Paul says what Paul says, you know? And so I think there's times where it's cultural and there's times where it appears to be a core principle for all time. Paul, when Paul says, I don't permit women to speak, he references creation and says, Adam was first and then Eve. So he seems to be making a case for, this is the way it's designed, this is the way it's always been. And so he's making this, it's not like cover your hair because the neighbor is. It's like, this is a universal principle from the dawn of time, you know? And so that's kind of how that works, I think. Not, and it's not, I mean, that's not, I'm not at a point where I would fight someone over that issue. You know what I mean? And I think that in this church, most churches that take the complementarian position would say, women can't preach, women can't teach, women can't all these things because it's a man's job. Equal but different. Here, Jason and I take a position that biblically, the only rule there is women should not have authority over men. So we believe that the elders of the church, like the leaders of the church, should be male. But with leaders, with male leaders, a woman, we think a woman could preach as long as she sits under the authority of men in the structure of the church, right? So that if she got off base theologically, the elders of the church could resolve it. Because it seems to us like it's a headship issue. Like God is the head of everything, and Christ is the head of the church, and the men are the head of the family, and the women are the head of the children, and the, you see what I'm saying? So it's this covering thing that appears to go to the top. So I would say as long as the church is covered by male authority, a woman could teach, a woman could, they just couldn't exercise authority. It's a mediated position. It's like a middle, it's like a fence riding position. Even deacons, elders, in the, there's rules in the in Timothy and Titus for elders, and it talks about being a man, a husband of one wife, right? And it's hard to read. You could be a woman into that. But deacons is this other role, and there's no such distinction made. And there's pretty good indications that there were female deacons in the old church. But in most Baptist churches, if you nominated a female deacon, it would freak people out. And I think, like we've actually talked about it here, what a deacon does is they serve. Like while the elders are handling spiritual authority, deacons are getting stuff done that needs to get done, like potluck has to happen for CR, right? And they're going to make sure that the food's there and they get all that done. They make sure that the flower bed looks nice. They make, you see what I'm saying? They take care of all this stuff. They make sure the sick get visited. They do these things that just have to get knocked out while the elders are doing the like spiritual ministry. And if you look at who does that in our church, we don't have deacons. We haven't picked them yet. But if you just pointed out who's doing deaconing, it's Janetta, Jeanette. You know what I mean? Now, they're kind of old school. So if I told Janetta you're a deacon, it might freak her out, you know. So we've basically decided to just shelve that issue because we don't want to cause controversy. But if we had to guess, we've got a bunch of female deacons. They just haven't been declared, you know. So that's kind of where I'm at on.
So what does an elder do? How do they oversee the spiritual?
The elders, that's a good question. The Bible is clear that in every city they planted the church, they appointed elders, right? And so there's a recognition that elders, like if you look at the requirements for an elder, I think you get kind of a feel for it. Let's see. Okay, and it says, the saying is trustworthy. If anyone desires to be an overseer, which is the same word as elder, he desires a noble work. An elder, therefore, must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, self-controlled, sensible, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not an excessive drinker, not a bully, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not greedy. He must manage his own household competently and have his children under control with all dignity. If they don't know how to manage their house, how will they take care of God's church? He must not be a new convert, or he might become conceited and incur the same condemnation of the devil. He must have a good reputation with outsiders so that he doesn't fall into disgrace. So it seems to me like in there, you got to be able to, and there's another chapter that talks about teaching. So there's a sense in which they need to be the teachers of the church, right? They're kind of the ones that instruct. And they manage the household, manage the church. So there's this just the business of the church stuff that has to get done. And then there's this idea that they have to be in good rapport with the outside world. So I think there's this like evangelistic component there that we ought to be out in the world. Like there's what difference does it make if the outside world likes me if I'm in here all the time? You know, so I think there's a sense in which they're supposed to be the sent out ones that are doing the business of reaching. Not all of us need to be reaching people, but that's like part of their core. So here we have five elders, me, Jason, Jim Kopp. Do you know these people?
Jim
Kopp does the sound with Jeff.
Okay.
Roger, who hands out bulletins every week, and Shannon, who plays bass. Right? That's the five. And four of us just got appointed elders about 6 weeks ago. And so it's been new. But basically, we meet every week and we talk about the budget and we talk about how, for example, and this is that whole managing God's household, we don't bring in enough to make, because the church is kind of new. And it was dying before it was us. Right. And so we inherited kind of a sick thing. Right. And then some of those people left. So it got sicker. And then now we're building it back up. But, you know, it takes time. And so right now we bring in less than the bills are. And so we are meeting right now and trying to figure out what is the most bare bones budget there is. And how do we take Jason's salary? Because it's Jason's salary that's the biggest chunk of the budget. How do we take that off the church somehow? And so we're working on this partnership with this other ministry where Jason can get paid by this ministry to do basically the stuff he's doing anyway, but then his salary would come from that. So then the church could move his salary off and everybody's good. Obviously, ideally, we're paying our pastor. Like, I'm technically on staff and I've never been paid. Whatever, right? And the idea was one day eventually when we grow, but who cares? I'm just trying to do what I do, you know? And so, but those things, we sit down and we have to cut everything. And then we have to look at things like, well, the Russians use our church when we leave on Sundays. I don't know if you knew that or not, but there's So, well, their contract for rent is 13 years old or something ridiculous. And no one's looked at it since. And so we had to sit down and go, what does it actually cost to keep the building open? And we really are trying to charge people what it costs rather than we're not trying to make money off somebody else, really. But we don't want to lose money when the Russians are here because the utilities are going. We can't afford to pay their bills, you know. So we had to go back to them and say, we'd like to change the rent from this to this, and here's why. And, you know, so the business stuff, we do a lot. Also, if there's a conflict, this is hard to do without, like, talking out of school. But, like, if two people in the church have a beef with each other, and it comes to our attention, we have to deal with the conflict and we have to resolve it, you know? And so we would have to meet with the people and figure out what's going on and kind of speak into it. If there's a, like, we have all our at groups and we were all doing the same curriculum, but then in one at group started doing its own thing, well, we have to watch that, because when we tell new people, here are our five at groups, we need to know what's being taught at all those at groups, because it speaks to, it's as if the church has blessed it. So we got to keep an eye on the spiritual brand of the church. We had, I'll tell you this, we had, oh, you know, we had that Rastafarian kid in, and you met him.
Right.
And I liked him so much, but he was really getting pushy with this idea that Jesus has already come back and he was an Ethiopian king and this whole story. And I met with him at Starbucks. I said, I want to hear your story. Because I love people with different faiths. Like, I love it. And I will listen to you. And I have compassion because I believe we're right and that they need to come to the truth. But I will honor them and respect them, because a lot of them have put in a lot of thought. Well, this kid has put a lot of thought into this. And I borrowed his autobiography of Haile Selassie, who's this guy that he says is Jesus. And I was reading it, and he's got notes like a Bible, like even more than a Bible, like all through it. And so I said, bro, listen, like, I really respect all the work that you've done. And I'm not going to just dismiss. Obviously, I disagree with you, but I'm not just going to say you're wrong. Take off. You know what I mean? Like, let's talk this out, and I'll try to understand you. You try to understand me. And then he kept telling us that he was going to try to convert everyone in the church. And I was like, bro, you can't do that. Like, you can come every week. You know what I mean? But you literally cannot just try to convert people in the church. And he goes, you don't have the authority to do that. And I said, biblically, it's my responsibility as elder, as shepherd, to keep the flock safe from wolves. Like, this is literally a commandment in scripture. Like, I'm like, not only do I have the authority, I literally must protect our people from people spreading false information in the church. And so... And I liked this kid, but at some point I had to go to the others and go, what am I going to do with this guy? Like, he literally refuses to listen to me, and he's going to actively try to sway people in the church. And we were like, he has to go. Like, it's just, he has to. And it's unfortunate, because I want him hearing the word. I don't want to kick him out, because then what? Then he's off there on his own. But I told him, I said, listen, bro, I didn't want it to be like this. But if you're going to refuse to listen to the leaders of the church, then you're not going to be welcome. And if you come, we'll have to call out and trespassing and blah, blah, blah. And he flipped out on us. He's a couple times threatened to protest. Like, we had a refugee dinner, and he said he was going to set up shop with books and on the street where we couldn't get to him.
Right.
And he was going to, like, proselytize people as they came in, and all the refugees and whatever. Anyway, that's one of the things the elders would do too. When things get ugly, the elders have to. And I hate that stuff when you have to come in and say. I remember when I was a kid, my dad was an elder, and they kicked this guy out of the church, and I did not understand. I'm like, how do you kick a guy out of the church?
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. And now I realize, well, I mean, it's just a trespassing issue. Like, if you just say, you're not welcome here anymore, this is private property, and if you come, then the police will take you out of here. Now, nobody wants to do that. But when there's, like, a predator, this is what I learned. This guy that I was protecting when I was a kid was, like, hitting on the young girls. Well, I didn't know that. My dad didn't tell me that. But they were dealing with protect the body, you know. So another thing that elders would do is church discipline. In Matthew 18, it talks about what to do when someone sins against you. And so if someone sins against you, and you, like, let's say you think that I said something like totally ignorant to you in here, and it really bothered you. Well, Matthew 18 says, you come to me and you say, Matt, that thing you said, it really hurt me. And if I go, well, good, I meant to hurt you, right? Then you go find one other person and you come back to me, and together you go, you really ought to apologize, it's not right. And then if that doesn't work, you get two or three, and so you kind of scale it up. Then you take it, eventually it goes to the church. Like, Matt is unrepentant of his sin, right? And if I still, after the whole church has said, you have sinned, you've done wrong, if I refuse to make it right, I'm supposed to be kicked out of the church as well, right? Because I need to learn. The idea is that when you kick them out, the whole purpose of, it's called church discipline, is to get people to see their sin and come back to the church. And it says sometimes you have to do drastic things and kick people out if they just totally won't change. And that kind of thing happens in the elders as well. Now, the way it should work is someone comes to us and says, hey, Matt sinned against me. What we should say is, have you talked to Matt? Right? Because why are you bringing this to me? Matthew 18 says, take it to him. Right? And so we should redirect that back and make sure that everything up to report it to the church has been handled. Otherwise, we're guilty of jumping the gun and making this a church thing, you know. And that happens a lot in churches. Not we're small, and it doesn't happen a lot here. But I've been in leadership at other churches, and that stuff happens a lot. Excuse me. Like, somebody burps right in the middle of it. Yeah. No.
It's really, you know, I've been watching a lot of, like, I don't, kind of, just because we're talking about this. So, Leah Remini, the whole Scientology thing. And that, of course, has spurred a lot of 1 hour, 2 hour documentaries about different religions. Mm-hmm. She just did one on the Jehovah Witness where mm-hmm. they talk about the two. And it's just interesting to me. Like, I don't, when I think of church not mm-hmm. having been involved, most especially mm-hmm. in behind the scenes kind of mm-hmm. thing, about how they're kind of very, they're similar, mm-hmm. but not. Like, mm-hmm. Your actions, the way you talk about your actions are completely different than a cult, because mm-hmm. a cult will shun you and they'll push you. Mm-hmm. Like, they're more hardcore, but it's interesting that it's still in there. You still have to. I mean, and it makes sense. It's not a business, but there is some business aspect to it.
It's in the, I mean, and Matthew, I think the purpose of Matthew 18 is to, my guess is, back in the day, people were just spilling their dirt to everyone. And that was the go-to. And so Jesus puts in this, slow this down, and let's get sin resolved as small as possible. So I think it's like anti-cult in the sense that the Christian process is avoid that if you can at all avoid that. Let's just work this out one-on-one. And if we work things out one-on-one, everybody's a lot better off. You know, and I'm telling you here, I've seen it here even, where if you just skip one step, right, and it causes turmoil. Because this person told three people about this guy's sin, and then it gets worked out, but now four people know. You see what I'm saying? And even that first level, if you skip it, spreads poison in places it doesn't need to spread, you know. And so it really is, it's intended to protect even the sinner. You know what I mean? Because that person's dirt, if it can be resolved, why does everyone need to know? You know? And so I think it's intended to be a protection for the sinner. In fact, there's another verse later that talks about if someone has an accusation against an elder, they should have two witnesses before they come to the elder. And some people see that as two separate things. I think it's one thing. And I think what they're saying is you could damage an elder so bad if you just jump the gun and you just make an accusation and you can ruin someone's career. I mean, we've seen this in politics, and accusation's right. Good enough. And everybody's, you know, from the right to the left, from Kavanaugh to Al Franken, we make an accusation and they're guilty, right? In half the country's mind. And so I think the idea is don't even go one-to-one with an elder, right? You better have someone else before you even start that process, because we got to protect the leaders. You could ruin their lives, you know? And so I think the whole thing is set up to be a protection of the church, you know? And we see that's interestingly back to the male-female, the idea of Christ being the head of the church, the bride of Christ is the church. And the whole idea is that Jesus protected his bride, and everything about Jesus is keeping the bride safe and saved and happy and healthy. And that's his job, right? That's why he did what he did. And that's why the man is supposed to cherish his wife in that same way, you know? And why wouldn't you submit to Jesus? You know what I mean? I've heard this before. If a man would just act like Jesus, no woman would have a problem submitting to him. You know what I mean? No, you know, if Jesus was truly your husband, you'd be like, yeah, heck yeah, I'll submit to him. He's Jesus, you know. But so a lot of this pushback is because men aren't acting like Jesus. And if we took that commandment seriously, to love our wives the way Jesus loved the church, women wouldn't have as big of a problem submitting to their husbands, you know. Well, we got elders, and I was actually going to talk about this Old Testament, New Testament distinction too, but we're on a roll.
So kind of that same, just that whole, just again, I'm infatuated with this whole Scientology. Yeah, yeah. Have you watched
it? I watched this first season.
Oh my gosh. It's mind blowing because it is such a head game. Yeah. And it is such a, but anyway, so it's interesting, like they want you to tell the elders of their church, like mm-hmm. you are to tell immediately all and then your you stuff. All your stuff to them to get you, instead of going and dealing mm-hmm. with it one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So that's opening.
You also excommunicate your family and friends. Yeah.
They isolate. Why do they do that? Yeah. So that they have a file on you.
Yeah. Right.
So that when you're Leah Remini, they pull up all your dirt and take out websites and say, this is what she did and what she's about and what, you know what I mean? That's the whole reason they have that dirt.
Well, I mean, I believe that it was never for any good for people, but it's just another kind of way of saying it really wasn't in your best interest, because the best interest would be to deal with it one-on-one and address it and not involve a bunch of other people if it's not necessary.
Yep.
Interesting.
Should you say she has a new series with like other religions?
The third season's getting ready to come out, and so she did Jehovah Witnesses. She did a 2-hour. Sorry, I watched it without you. I couldn't wait any longer. So she did a 2-hour thing on the Jehovah Witnesses, and because they had so many people come to them and say, "This is so much Scientology." It's almost identical to it in the way that they segregate them, in the way that they make them, it's different terminology, they make them separate from their family, and just in the two witness. So their big thing is the blood transfusions. They talk a lot about that and how they made that call so many years ago and now they can't really go back on it. And then the two witnesses, so they're finding with the pedophiles and stuff, like who witnesses that, how many children have somebody else that can agree with them that this is happening and be able to go.
Oh, the rules, you have to have two witnesses for anything.
You cannot go to the elders to make any sort of claim or talk about anything without two witnesses. So if the husband is abusive, they pretty much say, what are you doing wrong? Like, you aren't being the wife that you should be. If you continue to go back and forgive and do those things that you should be doing,
maybe you win
this will change his heart, kind of. I mean, you can
it's scripture twisted,
yeah.
Huh. That's fascinating.
It's interesting. Yeah, I feel like Scientology is going to reach out to me, because when that first came out, I was Googling it so much. Because, you know, you talk about, oh, it's a cult, but you until you really kind of lift up that veil. And
I signed up. I'm not going to lie. We used to live in California, and so it was just everywhere. And it always blew my mind how many of these celebrities were getting sucked into this thing and why. And I didn't get it. And I read Dianetics. Well, I tried to, but it's the worst. And not because I cared, like I wanted to follow, but I was just curious. And so I'm like you, I'll just dig in when I get into a topic. And I started to read Dianetics. I'm like, this is the worst book. Like, it is so boring. I don't know why anyone would be drawn into this. So then they have a thing where you can sign up for their classes online. And so I signed up to take their classes because I just wanted to get the intro. Like, what would draw you in? Like, what are you telling people? And I'll tell you what, I did the first set of lessons and it did nothing. It didn't interest me in the least. But they will, that's been 8 years. And I get an email from my person, like my assigned person, regularly. When are you going to finish these lessons? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, 8 years later, like this one person I was assigned to is still trying to pull me in.
It's money.
Yeah, a lot. Of money.
Well, I mean, they have an incredible work ethic. Like, I mean, they work them 18 hours a day, 7 days a week from the time they're 10 years old.
They have no friends.
How weird is they have, like, a Navy? That's what blew my mind. Yeah. I was like, what? How do you convince someone of this, you know?
You probably, because you have a good, solid Christian upbringing and background, is probably why they didn't rope you in. But those people that are just
looking for something.
Just looking. There's something missing, and I don't know what it is. They're able to connect those dots for them.
Yeah.
That's how they pull them in, so.
Yeah.
I know my nephew, when that first came out, I was talking with my nephew and said something about him, like, have you watched it? And he was like, oh, no, but, you know, there's these classes that I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm like, watch those. Please watch those before you start taking, because he would be one, not having a really strong Christian sort of background at all. Dan, and he's in his early 20s, kind of, you know, my sister's kind of hippy-dippy, and so is, you know, and that's fine, but, yeah.
Well, they have a pretty nice center on the Loop. And
but no patrons, do they?
They have a huge building.
Have huge buildings all around.
That's
the world.
That's where they put all their
money.
They
buy all property
because they can shell it there.
I'll tell you what, we went to the Festival of Nations at Tower Grove Park, 125,000 people, and right at the entrance to the park, not in the park where you'd have to pay for a booth, which I thought was kind of cheap. Like, get a booth. Yeah. Actually, I think they didn't, because you couldn't be religious. Your booth couldn't be religious. And so, like, I emailed the Institute and said, we're kind of a religious organization, like, you know this. And they said, yeah, but you're not preaching Jesus at your booth. You're just Christians doing this thing that's good. And so we're okay with you having a booth. So we had a booth inside. And but they lined up at the entrance. And there was, like, 8 of them. And they each were speaking a different, like, there was an Arabic one and a Chinese one and a, like, in like eight different languages. And they were ready to talk at to all these people from around the world.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, they, I mean, they're organized.
Yeah.
They train these people. And they said they're, what, 50,000 people, but they're worth $2 billion.
It's crazy.
It's, yeah. Yeah.
Because they get from celebrities and they milk them.
Yeah. I still wonder if, like, Tom Cruise believes this. Or if he's just so well paid by the organization. Oh, yeah.
They pay for everything, and he's got slaves, basically.
Yeah.
They even hook up his girlfriends.
I know. That's crazy.
Wives, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and his wives don't talk about it because there's children involved.
Yeah, so Nicole Kidman has never said anything. No. And what's her name? His mom. Yeah, she's never really said anything. Mm-hmm. That's so weird. They come out all quiet. No word about it.
Well, they got dirt on them.
That's the thing. They got a tape of all the stuff they ever confessed to.
And there's children. They don't want to be disconnected from children.
Yeah. Cool.
What else? Give me a side track.
No, you're fine.
I've always believed in God and Jesus. Like, I've always felt that, but I've not been a heavy church goer or church understander. If that's important. And so for me, looking at all these different sort of religions kind of helps me understand that. I truly do believe in you know what I mean? Like, that's a mind game. That's a money maker. Like, and so to have that kind of...
And there's money makers in Christianity,
too. No, yeah.
You got to watch the teachings.
Yeah.
That's why. That's true. Like Jason, and he doesn't...
We are making no money.
Well, no, that's not what I'm saying.
You're like, we only go to churches that are broke.
Go down to Joyce Meyer and listen to what she says, and she says some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I've watched some videos of her, and she's off the wall.
Yeah.
But she makes a lot of money.
Yeah. She got the whole compound.
Yep.
Like, all her kids have giant houses.
I thought they had to sell those.
They might have. Yeah.
I think they finally came back and said she was shelling it under the church, and they had to sell them.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they just got this other way.
Yep.
So, one of the, and this is way off subject, but one of... And actually, if you want to finish talking about what we were talking about.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
We'll stop here.
Okay.